remember in high school there was this movie I loved, and it was called Step Up, and it starred Channing Tatum and now Jenna Tatum. And I actually didn't know until just a couple days ago that they actually got married. That awesome couple that danced together got married 9 years later in a public statement, which is why we're talking about it. You know, Chris, I don't really like to like talk about the gossip behind scenes.
So much of it out there.
Right. Yeah. It's just too much. You're listening to Trending, by the way. That's Chris Mueller. I'm Timory Millington. Hello there.
Hey, everybody.
But Channing Tatum and Jenna are actually divorcing after 9 years of marriage, one child later, and their statement is just super intriguing.
Yeah, we have lovingly chosen to separate as a couple. We fell deeply in love so many years ago and have had a magical journey together. Absolutely nothing has changed about how much we love one another, but love is a beautiful adventure that is taking us on different paths for now. And you see this when Gwyneth Paltrow and her husband separated too. Remember, they lovingly uncoupled too.
And we talked about Gwyneth Paltrow on the last show. And when I was reading the story, she talks about her husband as like her best friend. She talks about him familially, and yeah, they spend time together with their kids, which is really nice for a divorced couple.
Right.
But, still doing this together, like that show, Splitting Up Together.
Right. Yeah. And okay, so yeah, you're right. That is absolutely, if you're getting a divorce, which I'm going to say you shouldn't be doing 99% of the time, I'm going to say probably you could probably work towards it. Anyway, blanket statements. But here, like this is better. We want you to love each other and be friends and do the best for your kids possible if you're in that terrible situation. Absolutely. But I'm reading this statement. I'm saying like, well, if we've lovingly chosen to separate as a couple, we feel deeply in love in so many years. Like, nothing has changed but how much we love each other, then you shouldn't be getting divorced. You should be working it out.
Well, and this is what's interesting. Nothing has changed, like you said, about how they love each other, but they're loving each other into new paths because they want each other to be joyful and happy. And I just am reading this, looking at how they talk about how they're doing this as best friends, and they talk about joy-filled lives is what they want to encourage. But that makes us ask the question, like, what is joy and happiness? And, you know, I think that we've just completely warped what is reality. Like, we create this fantasy world like, oh, I am joyful when I'm watching that Hallmark movie that makes me feel good, you know?
Yeah, marriage, there's a lot of joy in marriage, but there's also struggle. And there's also times of, you know, struggle. There's times of anxiety and fear. That's part of life. It's not just part of marriage. That's part of life. You can't be a human being without having times of struggle. You can't be a human being without having times of anxiety and fear. You can't be a human being without times of feeling isolated and alone. And so as a human being in a marriage is a lifelong institution that you're entering into. What you're saying is, through these times of feeling isolated and alone, through these times of feeling frustrated and angry, through these times of feeling scared, and also through these times of feeling totally and madly, passionately, you know, attracted towards each other, we're going to work on our relationship and work through it. And that's what I think is lost here with this couple. And, you know, I'm super happy for them that they're going to try to make this as good as they can for their child, but it would even be better if they stayed married to each other and worked on that relationship and went through the rough time and maybe scheduled back. I mean, here's you got, like, this is the thing about the celebrity couples when they divorce like this. A lot of times it's because they're so busy, their lives have gone different ways. He's involved in his project, I'm involved in my project. You have a gazillion dollars. You could move to a normal town in America and say, we're just going to live off the money because we want to do the best for each other and for our kid, because that's what love does. But instead they say, no, we have to have the freedom to do these things. And, you know, I get frustrated when I read these stories.
Well, where's the focus on your career or on your family? And you see so many, you know, Hollywood power cups splitting up. You have to ask the question, you know, was it just the woo of the moment? And for me, coming from the dance world, looking at this, you know, they were in a movie that was just phenomenal. It really took off. You know, it was a movie not only that had, you know, a lot of music, but it had a lot of dancing. It was almost the non-High School Musical version of a good, solid dancing full story that didn't have all the musical elements as such, where we're singing every 2 seconds, right? And of course, I think, of course they fell in love with each other. I was not surprised to hear that they got married. Of course, you know, the excitement and the intimacy of dancing was something very special that they shared, and becoming very popular in those roles and dancing very well together. Of course they got married. But now they're a little older. not the same level of attractiveness as they had before, not maybe the same ability to dance as they had before. You know, they're not doing that. They're focusing on children, different things. Is the woo still there? Are there these distractions that are there? And is the woo somewhere else, right? And I talk about that, like, is the entertainment, is what's maybe newer and younger available in other areas? And, you know, I don't know what's going on behind the scenes. I'm sure there's a lot of speculating. I haven't looked at that. All I've seen is a statement. And it breaks my heart to say that, you know, they loved each other then, and now they're loving each other through a change that is radically stepping away from their child's right to grow up with their mother and father together, right? Natural-born right.
Right. And again, there's this Band-Aid we put on in our modern culture that says, well, no, we love each other. We're going to be good friends. It's all going to be okay. Nothing's going to change, except we won't live together and we're going to date other people. That's not confusing. But the reality of divorce is, if that's the case, then you're still going to be in each other's lives on a daily, weekly basis. So what's the point? Right. Mm-hmm. Then what is this about? I can speak to this from experience with family, and divorce doesn't mean I'm never going to see you again. Divorce doesn't mean that all of our problems are going to go away. Divorce doesn't mean we're never going to be frustrated with each other. All that stuff still comes up and still happens. It just happens out in this kind of weird, now painful. There's just been this wound that's been inflicted. And in a sense, almost makes it worse, because now you live with the wound rather than having sought healing for the wound.
And there was something you said, I think, before we started talking about how they still have each other for the rest of their lives.
Yeah, you're not done. You're stuck with each other. You've got this child. And if you're going to be in his life and then in his kid's life someday, then you're going to be in each other's life.
Well, and do you realize that, you know, growing up with extended family members in difficult situations, you know, you still have to be around for things? Or are you going to expect your children to go to separate places for every holiday and make multiple stops along the way, never allowing them to just be in one place and to have all their family together? You know, I think it's hard enough as people grow up and marry and have bigger families. You know, there's this breaking away from each other that takes place as you further pull that divorce and remarriage. And now, you know, where is that moment of celebration of togetherness now?
Yeah. You know, and I don't know Channing Tatum. I don't know Jenna, but I know in the church, for instance, like, we go through, people get divorced in the church. It happens. It's not supposed to happen. It does happen. But then that question becomes of, like, if the people in front of me at Mass every Sunday ended up getting divorced, did I mess my life up by making myself inconvenient to talk to them, to be part of their life? Did I even know what was going on? Mm-hmm. You know, or the people in my community, like, when I know a marriage is struggling, am I reaching out and saying, gosh, I know you guys, you know, are having a rough time. Can we babysit? Can we take your kids for a weekend? Can we, you know, how can we help? Do you need to talk? Do you need a friend? Like, you know, what are we doing to support marriage rather than just wringing our hands and going, oh, it's such a shame, we shouldn't have this happening. You know, like, are we structuring our communities to support and lift people up? And you know, were there people in this couple's life who could say, gosh, I feel like you guys are drifting apart. Like, yeah. I can call, you know, like, in my family or in my friend group, I have people who can tell me I'm an idiot, right? Like, did Channing Tatum have someone who say, dude, you're being an idiot. Your priorities are all screwed up. You're trying to make this Gambit movie, which is maybe never going to happen. But right here in front of you, you have a dream. Why are you focused on that dream, not this dream?
Mm. Well, and I think that brings up an important question of, what are our dreams? And are they just dreams in the cloud, something that's attainable that we have to leave everyone else for? Like, how do they line up with where our lives are? Is it something like, oh, I would really like to do this one day? Or is it just abandoning your family and chasing something that's completely self-seeking rather than sacrificial? And I hear you, Chris, you know, when you're talking about this, you're talking about love and responsibility for other people around you who you interact with on a daily basis. But we've lost that even with the people we interact with within the home, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Everybody, it's this weird thing that I think, on one hand, we have in families, we have child worship, right? Where everything comes about driving the children to the places they need to be, right? And so that is a real stress on a relationship between a mother and father, because if you're so busy doing child worship, then you can't build a relationship with each other. Everybody gets to the end of the day and they're exhausted. And then what happens is, out of child, I use this term, I made it up, I don't know if it's real, but you know, out of this idea of, like, we're just chauffeurs for our children's activities, you get to the end of the day and mom doesn't feel fulfilled, dad doesn't feel fulfilled, they don't feel connected. And then you start getting this, well, I need to find myself. I need to do things to make me happy, because we've given up and we've just kind of entered into this weird sort of situation where our lives revolve around taking our kids to stuff. And it's a strange thing. Again, I don't know Channing and Jennings' Chana and Jenny's situation, but I see that happening a lot in the families that I know.
Right. Distraction.
Oh, yeah.
Distractions at the heart of it. And distractions come in so many different forms, whether it's being interested in someone else other than your spouse or than someone you're dating, whether it's being interested in a television show more than your children, whether it's, you know, this addiction to our phones. There are so many directions that we can step into that pull away from the truth of what we are living in that responsibility that is at the heart of who we are.
Right. Absolutely. You know, and again, if the devil won't kill you, if he can't kill you with bad things, he'll kill you with good things. If he can't destroy your marriage with bad things, he'll destroy them with good things. And a lot of times that is all of the various things we've gotten involved in for the enrichment of our kids. Then you ask most parents, when was the last time you read a book for yourself? When was the last time you went on a date? When was the last time you did these things? And they go, well, we don't have time to do that stuff. Well, then something is disordered in your relationship. But there's all these good things. We can't lay all these good things are good for our children. No, but it's disordered. There's the order's out. We need to work on the relationship.
I think it's difficult, though, when we think that we can do everything, right? When we think we can accomplish anything, you know, having goals and having dreams are a wonderful thing, but you are going to burn out if you try to take on every extracurricular activity, every volunteer position. If you try to take on too many projects, even at work, and don't have a moment to say, hey, actually, I can't handle this until 2 weeks from now, right?
Right. I mean, sometimes loving your spouse, loving your children is saying we don't have time for that in our life right now.
This is Trending. That is Chris Mueller, and I am Timmarie Millington. We will be back in just a minute. In the meantime, be sure to check out the show on YouTube and Facebook Live. Fantastic news over the weekend. Backpage.com. Pause. Do not Google that website. Well, actually, I guess you kind of could for the time being, because the FBI has actually seized the website and they have done a full raid in the home of its co-founder.
Yeah, they shut it down.
So if you know what Backpage is right now and it wasn't in the news, praying for awareness of any pornographic addictions, possibly, right?
Right.
Just throwing it out there. I kind of wanted to introduce it that way. This is Timmarie Millington. That is Chris Mueller. Because Backpage, fantastically, is being shut down. It helps to facilitate relationships, prostitution, and really is a pornographic website.
See, I never heard about Backpage.com until we brought someone in from a group called Invisible. It was a group that was dealing with child exploitation, right?
Yes.
Like the selling of children. And she was coming in to do this night of awareness for our teens so they could watch out against all these strategies. And she kept referencing Backpage, like this thing. And I just saw the statistic, 70% of these child trafficking cases have involved Backpage.com.
Yeah.
70%.
The trafficking of not just adults, but in particular young children. You know, we've seen some incredible sting operations take place under this president. I have to say, we've got to be grateful. He has made a priority to really address the issue of sex trafficking, especially for minors. But in general, there was a huge sting operation that took place just in San Bernardino County last year. They go into these places, Chris, and they're not just taking down, oh, there are five women that have been brought in from a different country. It is hundreds of people, hundreds of women in sexual slavery, children. I mean, I hear these stories. It sounds like you've brought in speakers as well, where people are going in and carrying young children out in droves, out of dens, truly dens of sexual slavery, where these children are being sexually abused and exploited for the sake of selling media online.
It's stuff that you, as an American, we tend to think, oh, that happens in other places, other parts of the world, you know, and you think of all this, any third world nation that, oh, it's terrible. We got to send money or help or missionaries. No, it happens here.
Yeah.
It is happening here. And it's on the rise here. And you mentioned pornography driven by this kind of sex addiction that our culture's in. This stuff is on the rise. And yeah, Backpage.com, you'd see, you know, and what the woman had referenced was, you know, like one night only, Temecula, and they would reference, you know, the person's name, and they would use keywords, you know, that would indicate that this is an underage person. So they wouldn't say underage, but they might say like Lolita or, you know, and you know, Backpage, you know, oh, well, we can't control the content that people put on our website. This is just a message board and freedom of speech. And then you've got these advocates, these women's march type people behind the women's march who are saying, this is a tragedy that they shut it down. It put sex workers in jeopardy. And, you know, this was a way that they could advertise their use. Prostitution is illegal. And even if it wasn't illegal, it's still the exploitation of a human being. You're still reducing a human being to an object to be bought and sold. Whether that be in an hourly rate or as a slave, you're buying a human being. Like we can't let that happen. So yeah, the fact that Backpage got shut down, I couldn't think of a better thing to happen on the internet.
I mean, what fantastic news. And I mean, this is on the heels of just over the last couple of weeks, we saw that Craigslist, Reddit, and some of the other companies that have allowed for advertising at times of basically sexual advertising or escorts or facilitating any type of sexual relationship, that is being shut down online. Those ads are really being hunkered down on. And it is fantastic news because we have to see that when people are sitting here responding saying, oh, well, Chris, if you're not in favor of allowing these websites to facilitate them, people are going to go back to street walking. That may be so, but I look at it, and if they do go back to the street, which I think is just as dangerous as someone anonymously purchasing you and meeting you in a location on the street, maybe someone could pick you up for good and say, here, let me help you and take you somewhere, rather than everything taking place online.
Absolutely. I mean, online, you have the opportunity for these numbers to explode. On the street, there's limited real estate, and then there's a greater opportunity for enforcement, right?
Yes.
Because then, you know, cruisers going by can see this, and then you can get out social workers and go out and try to help people. This idea of the internet is this open wild west of free speech, and we're still new in this idea of the internet, but what's happened is people act like, it's the slippery slope of censorism and that we, you know, that by doing this, we're changing the internet and we should have freedom of speech and this is infringing on their rights. And it's just like, well, guys, we've had freedom of speech for 200 years, but we've regulated that speech. And we've also had decency laws. And we've also said that as a culture, we're not going to accept these things. And we need to, just because it's on the internet doesn't mean all of a sudden none of that applies, right? Just because it's on the internet doesn't mean that suddenly it's everything goes and that the government shouldn't have a hand in that. And I'm not a huge government regulation guy, but I'm absolutely against the selling of children and women. And, you know, we talk about like women, like in the sex business, like they are in control of it. Well, no, sadly, a majority of the time they're being bought and sold by other people. This is not something you do because no one enters into prostitution because they want to. They enter into prostitution because they don't feel like they have any other choices. And oftentimes, they're not the person who decided they were going to go into it. Someone else pushed them into it. And then a lot of times, someone else is controlling that business, not them, right?
Well, in throwing perspective into that too, I think a lot of the time someone is pressuring you to do it, like you said.
Yeah.
Those are circumstances, but there's another circumstance that takes place, and it's one that I've personally worked with seeing these women in crisis pregnancy, is that sometimes women have devalued their body to such an extent. Maybe they grew up in a broken home. Maybe they at some point got involved in some sort of sexual intimate relationship very young. I know some, you know, 13 years old, she ended up having an abortion, and next thing you know, she had devalued her body to an extent that she was okay with pornography, or not with pornography, sorry, with prostitution. And it was because she saw that there was no value to her. No one else valued her. She didn't know anything else than what she had experienced. She had gotten to the point of allowing someone to violate her body and the body of her unborn child, that what does it matter anymore to her? And so you see these circumstances where they're living in the depths of just total sexual perversion, where they're then the mistress of someone. And we see these women that come into the crisis pregnancy center and they want out. They hear someone saying that you're worth so much more. But at that point, it's an addiction to the lifestyle as well. An addiction to thinking, I am worth nothing.
Right. It's, if I'm not this, what am I?
What am I?
If I'm not here, where will I be? So, you know, good for the federal government. I'm glad to see them making moves and doing things like this. I want to see it continue. You know, should we have message boards online? Absolutely. Should they be selling children and women? Absolutely not.
I mean, absolutely.
Why is that not just duh?
Isn't it, that's why I'm laughing. Like, it's so logical. And I think that this is where, here on Trending, call it for what it is. The insanity of the transgender movement. We're going to talk about freezing eggs for a kid who wants to transition in a minute here. Before we do that, just another topic that I think is a really noteworthy, and that is the issue of antidepressants. People today, we're discovering, are addicted to antidepressants in the sense that they cannot quit. So whether you want to call that an addiction or not, it is. If you can't quit something, you're addicted to it. And what's unfortunate, Chris, is that medical professionals today are saying, we don't know how to help people who can't quit.
Yeah. And, you know, the scary thing is, one, we're on antidepressants more now than at any other time before in human history. Like, it's just given out. And I can tell you from my own work in youth ministry, I'm seeing a rise in anxiety disorders. I'm seeing a rise in depression. And yeah, these kids are going on pharmaceuticals to deal with that. Again, I just wish as a society we'd say, what's broken? Like, it's not the kid. The kid is perfectly healthy. What's broken in the system that's getting to a person to a point that they need? And again, there are people who have chemical imbalances and they need, you know, pharmaceuticals. I'm not saying that doesn't happen, but I think we have to step back and say it's a good chance our system is disordered, right? Like, that's, you know, there's something broken, and it's not the kid. It's the system around the kid.
Right. Well, I see stories where the women come in. There was one a while back. The woman's in a crisis pregnancy. She is coming in. She's pregnant and she's got all this anxiety. She's worried about the health of her child because her health doesn't seem quite right. In addition to the nausea, the vomiting, the morning sickness, and she has all this anxiety. Well, she's on antidepressants at the same time as she's pregnant. And what's the impact on your baby? There's so many elements, well, to help her have a less stressful pregnancy, but then she's not pregnant anymore. She has her baby and she's on antidepressants, and now she can't cope with the child because of the side effects of the antidepressants. And we're saying, you know, work with your doctor to try and get rid of these drugs that you are relying on that actually are not helping you to get over the very thing you sought them for.
Yeah, it's, you know, I think, again, this, we go back to that idea of it's an easy fix. We talked about this in the last show and dealing with, you know, guys getting vasectomies. It seems like an easy fix. Antidepressants seem like an easy fix. And in a lot of cases, they can be life-changing for someone who's struggling with a clinical condition. But that's not without cost, and it's not without side effects. And I am not a psychologist, I'm not a psychiatrist, but it seems to me that you shouldn't be prescribing antidepressants if you're not also dealing with talk therapy, if you're not then working on getting a person to a point where they don't feel like they need them or they can function without them.
Right. Working on exercise, working on spending time outside, working on volunteering your time, working on being thankful. These are all things that are proven to help people who are struggling with depression and anxiety. Getting outside of yourself, getting outdoors, getting those endorphins kicking in the body, which are chemicals that make you happy.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and so, you know, get out and get for a walk.
We'll be right back on Trending. That is Chris Mueller, and I am Timmerie Millington.
It's kind of a theme of what we've been talking about, even when we talked about divorce, but like, are we dealing with what's broken?
What's broken in our society? You know, I look at this story of a 27-year-old woman who is on antidepressants and has been for over 3 years. By the way, this is Trending. I'm Timmerie Millington, and sitting next to me is Chris Mueller. This young woman, 27 years old, did not finish college because she was suffering from anxiety, depression, and here she is 3 years later trying to get off of something that she cannot quit. She never finished school, and now she's feeling like she's just having to figure out how to get off the drug so that she can now regain her life. And it's something that wasn't done when she thought it would be done with antidepressant.
Right. You know, these drugs, right? They seem like a miracle cure, a miracle fix, right? The birth control pill, or antidepressants, or, you know, surgical procedures like a vasectomy. But none of those things actually fix anything. They just kind of break something, or they mask something. Like for instance, a lot of times women are prescribed the pill because they're having a regular cycle, they're having issues like that. That the pill doesn't fix it; it just masks it. Antidepressants don't fix the problem; they just mask the problem. And so, you know, it just seems like the height of irresponsibility to go immediately to that and not to try to deal with some type of talk therapy, not try to deal with some sort of lifestyle adjustments, like maybe spending less time on the internet or on social media, or getting out and taking a walk, like you said, or practicing thankfulness, or getting in some kind of social grouping, and just to say, well, no, you take a pill, it'll get you through for a while, and then not telling people that that pill is going to have withdrawals, that you right. may not be able to get off it later. I mean, that seems... it seems like a malpractice situation, and I'm not a lawyer and I'm not a doctor, but it just seems kind of wrong.
Well, when the medical profession is outright admitting, we don't know how to help people who can't get off of this, even the proper procedure for weaning people off isn't quite working, especially because there's issues with severe withdrawals. Even in New Zealand, they're talking about the issue of withdrawal. There is one case study that I was looking at recently, 180 longtime antidepressant users who had at least been using them for a number of years. Basically, over 130% of them reported symptoms of withdrawal after having been addicted, trying to get off of these antidepressants. Well, you know, on a personal note, I have to share, I've had a number of close friends and family members who have been incredibly impacted by antidepressants. And I can think of two in particular who hit a point where they're on the antidepressants and just outright say, I am not okay. And thank God they shared that with someone else. I know one who was even talking about holding a child and having this experience of just wanting to do something with a child, or even drop the child, knowing that's not in their nature. They love children and there was something wrong with them. And, you know, I have to say, I've seen the worst of the worst cases with antidepressants. I have seen the experience of suicide and extended family members as a result of it. And, you know, we're looking at the medical profession right now saying we don't know how to help people wean off of it. We don't know how to help people who just can't get off of it. There's a big I don't know, but there's no hesitancy to put a young child on an antidepressant because they're going through puberty and having a hard time.
It seems like there should be a middle ground there somewhere, right? And okay, so when I was in college, I had my breakup when I was 19 years old, and I found myself in depression. I mean, like, I remember I went to the doctor and I said, I sleep all the time. I feel like I can't do anything. I'm not da da da. And he's like, you're depressed. And I said, that's no. And so he tried to prescribe me antidepressants, but just telling me I was depressed was enough for me to start kind of. And I was very lucky. My brother is a licensed marriage and family counselor, and we talked through. We did talk therapy essentially, right? But it was immediately, boom, right there. I mean, I went in one time, said I'm sleeping a lot, and I feel like I have no energy, da da da. I was convinced I had diabetes. Anyway.
You're also hypochondriac.
Something like that. But he was going to give me pills, right?
Right.
It's the same thing with your child's a little hyperactive. You give him ADD pills.
Yeah.
We want the quick fix. Gosh, we got to start dealing with what's broken in the system, not just masking the thing. Because yeah, you say, here's some pills, and now you've got a lifelong road. And again, there are cases where this is a clinical intervention that's going to make a difference in someone's life, and it's the right, responsible thing to do. Right. I'm not saying that's not true. And if you find yourself in that situation, I'm not judging you. We're not saying that's wrong. We're not saying stop taking your medication. But there is, I think in our culture, we have to admit, in our society, we overprescribe for any number of different things. And antidepressants are definitely one. We thought it was rather benign. But we're finding out now it's not as benign as we thought it was. People are stuck.
Well, and I love that you bring up the topic of contraception ADD medication as well. And again, we're no medical professionals, but the studies are out there. A lot of the evidence is clear. And I think a lot of us, even you, have listened to experiences of close friends and family members who have suffered after being on one of the three. And, you know, I have a dear friend who struggles with ADD, and they have had to really work to go, well, has medication been good for me? No, it's actually led to depression, weight gain, and a number of other circumstances and side effects that have actually changed in many ways how I interact on a daily basis. And I've seen people having an open perspective to working on being outside, exercising right, eating right, and how those basic things of sleep, exercise, the outdoors, and food can change the way you live with any disease you experience, any depression you might have.
Right. So as a parent, like, how do I set my child up for success? How do I set my child up to deal with this? Well, I'm a dad, and I can just say I can see a correlation between the rise of social media and the rise of depression amongst teens. As a youth minister for the last 17 years, I can tell you that I've seen a correlation. right? So as a parent, how help my kid deal with depression? Maybe make sure they're getting real interaction with human beings rather than fake interaction with human beings through social media, mm-hmm. right? Like that's, you know, I don't let my kids eat junk food all the time. Well, why would I get, why? Because it's false calories, right? It makes them feel like they're getting good food, but they're not, they're getting like empty food. Well, why do I give them false interaction so that they're not getting healthy interaction, but they feel like they are? And suddenly they find it, they feel empty and depressed. Well, that's a real easy thing. I can say, well, maybe that's an issue. We can deal with it. And we know that people are on social media more, are depressed more. Like that studies have shown. But are we doing anything about it?
Right. Well, and even just think about it. You could spend hours sitting there catching up on your latest TV show that you love. You could spend time trying to catch up with a friend on the other side of the country. But at the end of the day or at the end of that hour, half an hour, whatever it was, do you feel good? I remember hitting a point where I think I was in like freshman year of college. I just feel lousy spending time on here, especially freshman year of college. Everyone's on Facebook, right, hooking each other up. That's when a lot of people actually get Facebook. And I remember I ended up putting this ban of I couldn't spend more than 10 minutes on it, deleted all the apps on my phone. And I mean, it's been almost 10 years now since I've had all of that social media on my phone. And it has been fantastic not being obsessed with that content that does not make us feel better. We think that it is a moment of rest, but it's not restful.
Right. And again, we're not saying blanket statement, social media causes depression, that's all of it. But if you have a tendency toward depression and you're not getting the real healthy interaction that you need, is that going to exacerbate that situation?
Right.
Maybe. I mean, so what's, that's an easy fix. As a dad, as a person, I can look at my life and say, is this making me happier or is it not? You know, I used to have taken walks. There have been numerous occasions where I'm in my office working and I go, I got to get him to take a walk because I'm just feeling down, right? I just need to get out and just get some sunlight on me. It's a really easy fix.
You think about the difference though in a culture, never before did people sit as much as we do today. They were used to being active with their hands. Even just the tactile feeling of working with dirt, shovel, whatever it might be, cooking. Man, like you feel good when you accomplish a task. Even I think cooking is so important because even if you feel like you've been on your computer all day and nothing's done completely, things like making your bed and completing a meal, you accomplish something and it's a reminder that you have.
It's interesting because you look at like the trend in gaming and you see something like Temple Run, right? Which is a real easy game that never ends. You never finish it. You never complete it. Minecraft never ends. It just goes on. And you wonder like, well, how does that affect young people when the majority of what they're doing in their free time are playing these games that never seem to end? You never accomplish a goal. They just on go. And you never have that feeling of, I got something done. Mm-hmm. You know, I know when I beat Mario, it was a big deal, but it was done. It was, you know, it was
accomplished.
I accomplished. I finished it. I beat the game.
There's always a new game, the part two that you have to continue on and you wait for, right? That next jump to make it into that new realm. I think that when we're looking at all of these different things, you know, we talked, I think it was in the last show, about how it's ultimately distraction. You know, even something like reading a book or sitting outside allows us to sit with ourselves, to think, rather than playing a video game, although it's a little more interactive, or just watching television, or just, you know, these things that we do, browsing Facebook, social media, Instagram, they're distractions maybe from what we ourselves need to look at that we are maybe not properly handling, or emotions that we've not processed and we need to process. Because when we have something constantly in our eyes and our ears, we can't work through that on our own.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if there's any takeaway I take from this story, and a lot of the stories we talk about, is it's clear something's broken, it's not working. Yeah. And the quick fix is usually not the right fix. You know, and so we look at things like social media. That's not a quick fix. It's a hard fix. You know, you look at things like a marriage. Divorce is a quick fix, but it's not the right fix, and it's really not that quick, right? Or whether that be birth control, whatever it is, something's broken. We need to start dealing with what's broken in our society, not just putting Band-Aids on everything, because we're kind of like slapping up these temporary bandages on a dam that's about to burst. And I think we're seeing breakthroughs, and this rise in depression, I think, is a breakthrough.
Absolutely. You know, and one of the things that I think we can also talk about is prayer. How prayer is fundamental, not just getting outside, being thankful. Thankfulness is an act of prayer. Who are you thankful to? Ultimately, the providence of God and the timing. You know, this is kind of silly, but I always like to look at fruit and how intricate every piece of fruit is. You think about the pomegranate, you think about the strawberry, the blueberry, you know, and you look at all these little intricate pieces. Wow, like look at the beauty of what's been created. Like, thank you that this is coming from the earth and something that we can eat. You know, I think sometimes the more hippie-ish type of people have a greater sense of gratitude because they pause and reflect.
Right. Well, and if there's anything that's been taken out of the modern experience, it's pause and reflect.
Mm-hmm.
It's quiet. It's silence. It's the time to process life. Most people are on a rat wheel that runs continuously until they fall asleep, and they never process. So if there's conflict, they never process it until it just explodes. You know, if there's a loss of sense of self, they never process it. You know, and so yeah, just gratitude, just spending some time in silence and prayer.
Silent prayer, and maybe you don't know how to pray. Picking up your Bible and reading, look up what are the mass readings for today. Read the gospel. Maybe you start reading the Gospel of Mark or John from the beginning, or maybe you pick up your rosary and pray one decade of the rosary even. We are trending. This is Timory. That is Chris. I am not Chris. We will be back in just a bit.
Hey, Timory. So there was an article in the Chicago Tribune the other day about choosing fertility preservation before undergoing gender transition. So the headline caught me and I kind of went, what? You know? And I guess what the trend is right now, or the thing, is that when someone is transitioning from, and I hate how this is such a normal thing. When someone is transitioning like that, when someone is choosing to take on the effects of a male or female when they're a male, anyway, it's all backwards. But when someone is transitioning genders, they're saying to young teens, well, hey, someday you might want to have a baby, young woman who's becoming a young man. So why don't we freeze your egg so then you later can have a baby in vitro with another woman when you're a man, so you can be the mom dad.
This is absolute insanity.
Yeah.
We have to call it for what it is, Chris. You're listening to Trending. And trending topic right now is this idea of transgenderism. Like, I had a mom not too long ago when I was speaking in a parish. She goes, how do we deal with this? She said, every time I sit in the car, this is what my kids are talking about all the time. And I said, it's because it's confusing. And what is a mystery? What is confusing? What is anatomy that is covered up? I sometimes ask, maybe it would just help if we all walked around naked. It would just make everything so much clearer.
I think that would be a very awkward day. I'm not okay with that. Now, my two-year-old feels exactly the way you do.
I'm not saying I prefer. I'm just saying, yeah, it might solve some problems.
Well,
here.
Yeah, it'd be obvious. But I guess there's just something so inherent about, like, it's so contradictory. Like, this story is so contradictory because you have a woman who's saying, I want to be a mother, but I want to be a man. So it's like this, the ultimate, like, it's almost like the ultimate denial of what they're doing. It's just so... Again, it's another level of crazy in a story that's crazy. It's another level of wrong in a story that's wrong. It doesn't make sense. And I don't understand how it's just not obvious.
Yeah. Well, just look at the story, you guys. One young woman named Casey decides she's always wanted to be a boy. And with today's insanity, instead of helping someone who thinks that there's something other than what they are with, you know, therapy, with, you know, assistance, for example, say someone thinks that they are a 5-year-old child and they're really a 45-year-old person who was just in a car accident and is suffering a brain injury. Well, we would be trying to help them. No, actually, you are married. You are an accountant. You have 3 children. You're not a 5-year-old. You can't wet the bed. You can't, you know, like, you're just different things that you would try to help them to understand. We don't do that today because anything that somewhat involves sex, we don't want to touch. So here's this young kid, right? It's a she. She is a she. She decides she wants to transition 19 years old before they do it.
Well, I'm gonna say, if they can save the eggs, then it's a she.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, like, that's not, we let's not use the he pronoun for someone who has eggs.
Well,
like, that's like, that seems obvious.
Well, and this is what's so sad. So now you are going to go ahead and harvest your eggs, which this is something you guys have heard me talk about. Oh my gosh, it's like lights a fire under me anytime I hear about women being targeted to harvest their eggs, because it is so incredibly harmful for their bodies. Their body goes into super ovulation. Their body is producing higher levels of hormone than are natural, than are right, than are comfortable, and than are healthy. It actually causes a number of health defects down the road. But these young women are doing it for the sake of paying off student loans, having enough money to get through college. Well, this young woman's doing it because she wants to transition into being a man. So all they're going to do is they're just going to make your anatomy cosmetically look like a boy. But because of that, you probably won't be able to have children later. So at least they're offering. It right. shows that there's, even though it's not right, right? Even though it's not right to harvest eggs, it's showing a step in the right direction to recognize this is actually damaging and we might want to help them do something so that if they wanted to, they could have children.
Yeah, you're giving up your fertility.
Right.
So why don't you save it?
Right. Why don't you save it?
Because as a man, woman, or a woman, man, you're not going to be able to make kids,
yeah.
you know, and obviously you don't get pregnant when you're taking massive amounts of testosterone.
Yeah. Well, and here this young woman then ends up saying, well, even though it was counterproductive because I had to take a ton of estrogen, progesterone, and different hormones in order to ovulate as such, it was doing the exact opposite of what I wanted. Notice she is saying the opposite of what I wanted, not of what I am, who I am, right?
Right.
And so then what got me, Chris, is her, oh my gosh, this is so confusing.
It's weird.
Her mom then ends up saying, well, you know, I had to like come to terms with it. I understood, you know, sometimes high school is hard, but I just got really excited when I realized I'm a grandmother. And I just, oh lady, first of all, eggs without sperm, eggs unfertilized, you are not a grandmother. That is not a unique creation of human life. That is part of your child's body, right? That is part of your child wanting to genetically engineer children one day.
Right.
And in fact, potentially kill children one day.
In the in vitro process, how many of your grandchildren are then going to be aborted?
Aborted, right? Because let's say four of those children are then implanted in the womb. Well, we only wanted one and all four are surviving, so let's kill the other three.
Right.
I mean, it's genetically engineering children. The insanity, the lack of clarity in thinking is unbelievable here.
Reading the story, I just get to this frustration because you're reading, you know, Chicago Tribune, and it's a well-known paper. This isn't some random website. And this the acceptance of this as if it's just not even, it's closed, right? This is the way it is. This is normal. This is not up for discussion. And the referring to someone who's genetically a female as a male because that's what they prefer. Like all of that's just closed. I mean, so even not even just talking about the story that they're talking about, just the way they're talking about it, it's just so frustrating because it's as if the conversation has been had and that we, you know, the science is done. We know the outcomes, you know, all that. Again, we're experimenting on kids.
Right.
Like, you know, and all the data we have says the outcomes for these kids is worse having done this.
Yeah.
But yet we just all boldly, you know, in the name of not hurting anyone's feelings, we all boldly mutilate children and pump them full of hormones to do things that are completely unnatural, although we have to have our organic fruit. And we say it's all good. And it just, you know, how have we gotten to this point? It just frustrates me so much. Like we need, as Christians, I feel like we need to start just not being afraid and just speaking rationally.
We need to ask some of these parents questions such as this. If your child dislikes the way their nose looks, would you allow and pay for your child to get a nose job? Right? It's simply cosmetic. It's just a part of their body. It's part of how they identify and feel comfortable in their own skin. Would you allow them to get a nose job? Or maybe your child's partially overweight and she's obsessing with it. She doesn't like the way she looks in her Snapchat photos. Would you allow her to get a tummy tuck? Like, are these things you would allow your child to do? Because I was just hiking the other day and I remember as we're coming up, this girl's taking selfie after selfie and it was cute. She was actually with her mom and she was taking selfies with her mom, but she puts down the camera and she starts venting to her mom, oh, I look like Squidward, the character from SpongeBob, and my nose, it just looks just like Squidward. And she's going on. And all I could think was, well, first of all, if you weren't taking so many pictures of yourself and you weren't staring at yourself all the time, you wouldn't be criticizing yourself as much.
Right.
But second, we live in this time where we can alter anything on our body that we think that we can criticize anyone else's, you know, small nose, big nose, large head, whatever it might be, because we can change that.
Right. With a middle school student, everybody in middle school goes through a point where your nose doesn't fit your face because nothing on your body fits together because you're going through, everything's growing at different rates. You look weird. Middle school, you just look weird, except that it's part of life. Deal with it. Right. But, and same thing as you're emerging is your sexuality is emerging. Like, you don't know how to deal with that. Like, you don't know how to process the feelings, the emotions, all that stuff that's happening. that's normal that you're learning how to deal with that. What's not normal is when someone's saying, I don't know how to deal with this. I feel like I'm a guy. And the parents go, oh, you know what? You are. Let's just start the process. That's not normal. Like, that's not helping anyone. You know, why don't we ride this thing out? Why don't you say, okay, well, let's, yeah, I understand you feel that way. We love you for who you are. You may not like, you know, frilly dresses or whatever. You know, you want to dress more masculine, whatever. But let's kind of ride this out for a couple years until you're like 27 and see where you're at. Let's get you counseling and deal with this. Let's learn how to have this conversation as a family. Instead, we're like, no, you're 13. Let's start pumping you full of testosterone to make you go through puberty as a boy. That's there's so much gross insanity. And again, I'm taking the perspective of, if you believe in transgenderism, even if you believe in transgenderism, how can you possibly say it makes sense to do that at 13? When someone is still developing, as opposed to letting them get through puberty age 26, 27, right? That just doesn't make sense.
Well, and allowing them to get to that age too, 25, 26, more of the reason parts of the brain start to kick in. Your brain has developed. And I think that makes a big sense when we're looking at psychology and all of the science that has come into fruition. Why wouldn't we look at psychology and the impact on the brain of the child and how, you know, how they look at things might change as they get a little older.
Right.
And not just allowing or forcing prepubescent children to be forced from ever going through puberty. There's harm in that.
Oh, absolutely. There's harm in that. I think we just need to pray for our culture. We need to be firm and stand up and speak the truth. And that's not going to happen without the aid of our Lord. So God, help us bring truth in this society. Help us bring you to it.
And thank God for parents who do care and want to make a change in their lives. That's Chris Mueller. I'm Timmeri Millington. You are listening to Trending. You can find Chris Mueller at chrismueller.co. And you can find more of this show on Trending. Just Google Chris and Timmeri.